Chapter 2, 1932. Miriam fell in love with her baby brother. By the time he was two, everyone they passed on their daily walks commented on Eddie's golden ringlets. She made sure he was well-fed with soft food she made herself and dressed in clean, bright clothes appropriate for the weather. She tucked him in with a thick-knitted baby blanket of bright blue, and then off they'd go to the park or just around the block. Eddie seemed to enjoy these outings. He was quick to smile at passers-by and babbled as if in serious conversation with anyone willing to pay him any attention. Her mother didn't like the attention Eddie received. She was clearly bothered that this inconvenient child was admired and coddled when he was such a nuisance to her. Miriam suspected her mother blamed him for the extra weight she still carried. For once, again, being tied to her home by endless laundry and childcare duties. "Miriam, you fuss over him too much," her mother scolded in Yiddish. "Just sit him in the carriage on the porch. He doesn't need you to walk him around all the time." Ma stood in her faded house dress and house slippers, waving at Miriam as if there were flies buzzing around her. "But Ma, he loves the walks, and it's such fun to watch him wave to everyone." Miriam replied pleasantly, willfully ignoring her mother's behavior. To avoid confrontation and make her own life easier, Miriam pretended that Ma was like other mothers. She knew she was smarter than her mother, and not just because Ma was a peasant from the old country. Miriam prided herself on carefully observing the world around her, but Ma seemed to pay no attention to the larger world and lived in her own little cocoon of family and tradition. Gussie turned her eyes away from Miriam and Eddie. "My mother would never have tolerated this." Yet it had insisted that Gussie do what she was told and work hard with her sister and brothers while their father, Cosiel, sat in Torah study all day. "My father was hardly ever home, and work, work." I don't think he knew the meaning of the word. "Mama slaved all day, and so did we, once we were old enough." Yet it taught her how to be strong and survive despite the ever-present fear of pogroms and hunger. She knew this had made her too distrustful of people, but without that strength, she'd never have made it to America on a ship alone at the age of just 17. "I was so beautiful then. There were lots of parties on the ship to America. I've never felt so carefree. Maybe I should have stayed on the ship. My life has been nothing but work since. But it was much worse for Mama." Gussie thought back to a story her mother had told her about how, following custom, Yetta met her prospective in-laws for the first time at supper in their house. Cosiel's and Yetta's parents had tentatively arranged the marriage. Yetta wore her best dress, save for Shabbos and holidays. When Yetta arrived at Cosiel's small wooden house, he was at the shul with his father. His mother and sisters barely spoke to her and were neither warm nor welcoming. Cosiel's mother met her at the door and told her to sit down and wait for the men to arrive. Hoping to make a good impression, Yetta soon crept to the small kitchen area to see if she could help with supper. She saw a broom lying across the packed dirt floor. The floor itself, while packed earth, was as clean as anyone could expect from a shack in the shtetl. But beside the broom sat a pile of dirt someone must have carefully gathered and placed there. As Yetta looked at the broom, she noticed out of the corner of her eye that Cosiel's mother and sisters had gathered in the small doorway. Without looking at them, Yetta picked up the broom and swept the dirt into her hands. She carried the dirt outside and scattered it into the fields. She brushed off her hands one against the other, re-entered the tiny home, and placed the broom beside the door. Finally, she turned toward the women in the doorway. One by one, starting with her future mother-in-law, they already approached Yetta and gave her a gentle hug. They now knew what kind of life she would be. Together they finished preparing supper. Gussie had not been put through that test when she met Sam, because like so many other traditions, it had been left behind in Poland. Her mother was always proud of Cosiel and never complained, but when the opportunity arose to emigrate to America, Yetta took it and left her husband behind. No one knew exactly why she'd done that or why her husband hadn't followed her. Maybe she got tired of doing all the work and him sitting in shul all day, Gussie thought. Yetta lived in Fanny's house until she died, a sad, lost, lonely refugee. Gussie often felt that way herself. What do my children know of hardship? They made fun of her old country rituals behind her back, but she was smarter than them in the ways that really mattered. She could keep the family fed on very little. She could make matzo balls and a hearty broth to fill the belly. She knew how to use the cheapest cuts and free marrow bones from the butcher to make a filling stew. She had a talent for making something nutritious out of nothing. What did they know?